Welcome to Mazum Gumzo, African Scholarly Conversations, a podcast that highlights the perspectives of various stakeholders in academia and research fields across Africa through open dialogue on Mazum Gumzo on scholarly communication in Africa.
Welcome to Mazum Gumzo, African Scholarly Conversations, where we are joined by an expansive list of African policymakers, science communication specialists, innovators, and tertiary institution leads who contribute to this realm of scholarly and science communication. I'm your host, Joy Owango, the Executive Director of the Training Center in Communication, a research capacity trust hosted and housed by the University of Nairobi in Kenya. On today's episode, we are privileged to have a guest, our research capacity advisor on scientific writing and communication at the Training Center in Communication, that is Mr. Nicholas Alter. Mr. Alter is the founder of Writing Hub Africa, a research and training hub in scientific writing and communication, and he's also the co-founder of the initiative DALA Integrated Aquaculture Hub. He's also an accomplished researcher and academic who's published over 40 papers in peer-reviewed journals. And in addition to this academic, to his academic pursuits, Mr. Alter is an active contributor to the scientific community as a reviewer and academic editor for several scientific journals, and most recent being PLOS ONE. Welcome, Mr. Alter.
Thank you so much, and thank you for allowing me to be here today.
It feels like I'm home because, you know, this is where most of the things happen. So thank you so much for the introduction, and thank you for having me today.
It has been quite a journey. From when we started working with you as, from when you joined us as a student in 2016, as a postgraduate student, when you took part in our trainings on scientific writing and publishing, that we co-hosted with Dad. So it's been quite a journey from when you started as a student to where you are. So could you kindly take us through what has been happening beyond just being a student, working on your postgraduate degrees, and now opening up all these projects that you're working on?
Thank you so much. It's been quite a journey, and I think you have highlighted this very correctly. My background is in fisheries and aquaculture. Actually, I'm a limnologist by training, so I am an aquatic ecologist. During the training, I think when I had published a bit of papers and I had been doing some research in certain projects, but then I was doing things like, I was clueless about so many things, especially about scientific writing and communication. Yes, I was doing research. Yes, I was publishing papers. But sometimes I was publishing in journals that were not of some good impact and some good quality because I didn't know just the right things to do. So when I came for the training that was organized by Dad and co-hosted by TCC Africa, I think that is when I got to start knowing, hey, there is a difference even in terms of the journals that people can publish in. There is also a difference in the way you can select the right journal. These are things, you know, I would publish a paper and I would do a manuscript maybe with my co-authors, and then we would just send it out there without really, we were not very sure of so many things. So I think that is where the journey started. So after that training, I got a bit of interest. And sincerely speaking, my interest became more when, because the kind of training that I received that time was so hands-on. I had gone for a few other trainings before, but I had gone for trainings where, you know, the facilitator would stand up there, maybe in front of you people, and just, you know, tell you these things and maybe explain on the board or on whatever it was device they were using to explain. There was not so much chance for people to really also give their input and also just participate very actively. So when I attended this training, one of the things that intrigued me so much was the facilitators, I don't know whether, for a lack of a better word, I would say they did very little to in terms of explaining just up there. Because I remember there is the idea of annotated manuscript. I think that has stuck with me forever. And I use it even for my trainings, even at Writing Hub Africa that I'll talk about shortly. This annotated manuscript thing is a is an output that comes at that came at the end of the training. We were told that at the end of this training, we want to go home with the manuscript. You know, when the training started, when they said that, I said, okay, I think that's just the hype. It's too much to ask for. We cannot do this in the few days we are here. But then the practicality came where every section that was now being discussed, we were being told, we want us to do this. We were talking about abstract. We were told, now I want us to write the abstract, and everybody writes their own abstract. So, and then these facilitators kept saying, you don't have to get it right this time. We will figure it out. Don't worry. So we kept doing it. So by the end of it, I had a manuscript. It could not have been the best, but then I had an idea of a manuscript and I said, it is possible to show somebody how these things are done by showing them. So it is after that interest I was, actually, this is how I got to get to TCC. During that training, there was a section on reference management. I've remembered this. So it is during that time that the facilitator said, can somebody explain to us if you've used Mendeley or Zotero? I remember so well, and I've used Mendeley for a long time since when I was doing my master's at UNESCO IH in the Netherlands. And so I stood up and did a bit of an explanation about Mendeley, how to go about it. And the facilitator was intrigued, and also, you know, the TCC team was there. And it is around that time that I was told, hey, I think after that, then when we went for lunch, that is when the programs officer approached and said, hey, Nicholas, you did a good job. And I think are you interested in training people or showing people how these things are done? And I said, yeah, I'm interested in this. But then at that time, one thing that I did not have, I had a bit of a passion about this, but one thing I did not have was this facilitation skills. I would facilitate, I would teach people, but then I needed these skills honed. You know, I needed this skill. I needed somebody to, you know, show me how these things are done, the actual training. I had ideas, but then how then do you pass it to somebody? I've been a part-time lecturer. Even that time, I had been a part-time lecturer for 1 year before I went for this actual training. But then when I now joined TCC, this is when I got into training. And I remember, I don't know whether other organizations also do it, but at TCC, there is baptism by fire. I think we'll talk about this one time. So this baptism by fire was after I had been taken through the process. You are told you have the content, so part of it is this. So you are added a bit of more of the content that you can go and familiarize yourself with. And I had a mentor. I was attached to a professor who was showing me how these things are done, how to facilitate, how to engage. Basically, the whole thing's about training, about teaching, and about delivering content. And then now the first training, because that time we were still doing physical trainings, but then I missed them. Sometimes I miss the actual TCC trainings at Chiromo where...
Oh, yes. Because now they've all become virtual, most of them.
Yeah. It was a bit of... So during that time when I came for my baptism by fire, so the professor is seated back there. You know, when I came in, the first thing she told me was, I'm here not to monitor what you are doing, but I'm here to give you, you know, moral support. That is what she was telling me. I am here for moral support. So I am here to chip also from time to time if there's any explanation you want me to help you with. So I trained, and what happened is she had, she gave me, the feedback that she gave me after that training, I think, built so many things about me. And I think this is also a feedback that I got from Joy one time. There's a time we co-trained with Joy. We co-trained with Joy for some time. And there's a time we co-trained with Joy at one point. And Joy told me that, Nicholas, there's a piece of Nicholas that I'm not seeing in your trainings. You are there's something in you that when you talk and when you interact with people, but then why are you not bringing it into your trainings? And she said, next time you come for a training, I want you to come with that part that you're not bringing. So they didn't explain that part, what it was. So when I went home.
I think it is an issue of bringing in your personality as a trainer, because it's the human element of training. So that is something that is also very important when you come in as a facilitator, because, you know, you're interacting with people. So they need to see that personality within that process as well. Yeah.
When you told me, and I remember when Professor told me, Nicholas, you need to, there's a piece of Nicholas that I'm not seeing in your training. You are doing a
Right.
good job, and you also said, Professor also said, I think you are using your hands too much. You gesture, but then you gesture too much, and so you end up also confusing the people you are training sometimes with your hands because. So, you know, with this kind of feedback, now I'm conscious, even these days, I still use my hands to gesture, but then they showed me how to use them to emphasize on certain points. So it's been quite a bit of a journey. So after that, then I now started getting trainings. Unfortunately, now we transitioned. I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate. There are very good and bad sides to this, but we transitioned now to online trainings that I still do. So after that, I also underwent other trainings in different aspects apart from just scientific communication. I went into a lot of trainings about so many tools, about open science, about all these other tools. So slowly by slowly, because I've worked with TCC for some time, I have gotten to a point where now I am able now to also, I think it is out of that I said, hey, is it possible that I can also, I think Joy kept, there's something you kept saying at one point that there are so many people who need to be guided and helped and mentored in these things, and TCC Africa alone cannot do all these things for everybody. So you are telling me this in most of our conversations, and then I don't know, I sat down with a few friends and then we said, maybe we can form something, even if it's going to grow slowly, and finally, if it can come out with something. And I remember when we registered Writing Hub Africa, that has now brought about the TikTok channel that we will also, talk about slightly in. We registered this as part of as in fact it was the whole it we were all we, my the inspiration was out of what TCC does, and we borrow quite a bit because I loved what happened at TCC. We are told, when a tree grows out of a mango tree, these fruits do not fall far away from the tree. And we if you borrow from somebody, or you form something as an inspiration out of what someone else does, then you tend to do the good things you liked about it. So there's quite a bit that we do the other side. I think that is part of the journey right now. Maybe we can also discuss about the mentorship and other things as we go along, but basically, that's the journey up to where Writing Hub Africa was formed. That is also now training and mentoring early career researchers, but also working together now with TCC, also mentoring, because I am being mentored by TCC, but TCC is not only mentoring Nicholas or Uta. TCC is now mentoring Nicholas or Uta, but also mentoring Writing Hub Africa, because there is a partnership that is now running on TikTok, and we'll talk about it, why it
Absolutely,
is important.
absolutely. So pretty much what you're taking us through in your journey is that yes, you started as an early career researcher, as a participant in the training, and your interest in learning came about from the ease of how the research life cycle was presented to you and the support ecosystem that was presented to you. And this has led you to not only setting up your own company, which is Writing Hub Africa, which is also supporting career researchers on this in the scientific writing ecosystem, but also most importantly, you transitioned to becoming a research capacity advisor, where you're already working with various solutions that would support early career researchers improving their scholarly communication and improving their visibility. And also as a capacity advisor, it also made you also grow to becoming a mentor, of which you were a mentor with AIDA Africa, which is a research mentorship program and journal club based out of Nairobi. So you can see that you've gone full circle by just being trained, by coming in as a trainee, and now you've built up various partnerships, and you've grown in through the ecosystem that and community that TCC Africa has created. Now, bearing in mind that you have gone through this entire process and you're seeing, and now you're now actively not only being a researcher but actively mentoring researchers, what do you think? How can you take what part of your experience in the last 7 years where you've worked with TCC Africa and also started working with our partners. How, what part of those 7 years have actually influenced you on your mentoring approach?
There's one thing that I want to, I think this is a story, those who will listen to this and have had a very deep conversation with them will attest to this. I am one person who likes, this is what I tell people on a very loose way. I don't know how to put it, but I'll put it like this. I don't take myself very seriously. I only take my job seriously. So if you give me a job, if I'm pursuing something that I want to achieve, I will take that seriously and put my efforts into it. But then my personality does not allow me to be a very uptight and a very serious person in so many situations. So I think one of the things that has helped me so much to find my space within TCC is the fact that it's a free space. I don't know how people will define it, but my own definition of that and why I consider it a free space is I've always been told, Nicholas, just be you, just do you, be you and do you. In fact, when Harrison calls me and I tell him tomorrow, this training that I'm doing for TCC tomorrow, but I'm still a bit anxious about it because this is a new tool I'm trying tomorrow. Tells me, Nicholas, you've always been you. So why don't change anything? Just be you and do you. Now, TCC has always encouraged me to be me and to do me. In fact, I'm not doing anything different. With the people I mentor through Aid Africa or through my company, Writing Hub Africa, what I do is I always allow people to be themselves. I tell them, hey, if this is who you are, then we connect very easily when you find somebody is authentic. And I've found a lot of authenticity, especially for the people I'm working with at TCC Africa. That is one, authenticity and also allowing people to be who they are, because that has really, whenever I get a job at TCC, I'm told, hey, Nicholas, we are planning for next week. We want you to do this and that, kindly prepare. I don't have to crack my head. I will only maybe call or write emails just for clarification. But then I know that I've been given the free will to do what I think is best. Now, with that, it means that there's a lot of trust that has been put in me and in my capacity. And I think that is one thing that has also challenged me so much to be more of a mentor also, because I have always felt that, you know, the TCC trusts that I can be able to achieve whatever I've been given to achieve. So that has always encouraged me, because I also want to give people, apart from just mentoring them into scientific writing and communication, I would also want to give them that feeling of, I know I showed you this thing yesterday and I'm telling you today to write it. I know you will write it. So even if you write it and don't write it correctly, I remember sometimes I'm told to write a few things and send to TCC. The kind of feedback you get, I always get, is not the feedback of you should know better and stuff like this. It's the feedback of, this is a good job, but then I wish you could have written this way, because then it could bring it out this way. So that is one thing I do with the people I mentor. And I know many of them will listen to this podcast and they will attest to this. I always tell people, you know, the way you give feedback, and this is one thing that has always stuck with me. I always want, when you are running one of the trainings in the Open Africa Peer Trainers program, one of the things we were talking about is about giving constructive feedback. And this is one thing that even before that program started, I had already started seeing this in TCC. So that is one thing I also has also influenced the way I do my mentorship. I also always make sure that if we are having a discussion, I'll always say, yeah, if that is how you are thinking, it's fine. But then I think this way, rather than telling somebody, ah, that is not right. Or, you know, this giving feedback for me is one of those things. So trusting in me and giving some good feedback. But also, I have gotten quite a bit of tools that now can help me, because one is the kind of training that I got is hands-on. So when I'm mentoring somebody, I always believe, let's say I'm mentoring somebody on how, let's say they have written their thesis and now I'm mentoring them to extract a manuscript out of their thesis for publication. Just an example of one of the ways.
Right.
Now, I will have to use the tools that I was given. And these tools are so practical. So it cannot allow me to mentor this person generically by telling them, if you want to write an introduction, this is how you write it. No, I tell them, where is your thesis? Then I start asking the questions. Why do you want to publish a paper, for example? And then
Right.
this is how you develop a skeleton. This is where you start. This is the structure. Then with the structure, I don't give them what to write, because what to write is within their thesis. So I don't write it for them. I just tell them, in the introduction, I wanted to put information talking about A, B, C, D. The abstract, I want this and this. So we have a skeleton. So they go and do the skeleton, and then I just help them review and give them feedback that they can work on. That is
Right.
actionable. So those are some of the things that have really influenced the way I do my mentoring. And this has helped me, not even just about mentoring at AIDA Africa or for TCC or at Writing Hub Africa, but even at Maseno University, where I'm now completing my PhD. There are so many students who are behind me, and what happens is they know they can always hand to Nick. That's how they call me. Ah, you call Nick, he will help you do this thing. Nick knows everything
Right.
about scientific writing and communication. So those are the main things. The feedback is that I received is what I give, because we borrow a lot from our mentors, by the way. So if you are mentored by somebody who is harsh, somebody, then you tend unknowingly you end up being harsh to the people you mentor or the people you interact with. But if you get a mentor who walks the journey with you, holds your hands and tells you, because of course not every time you will do things exactly the way they are expected to be done, but then how then do you give feedback that somebody feels like this is not a personal attack or this is not hatred, but then this is correction?
That
That
is
is
true.
one thing I'm very conscious about. That is one thing I'm always very conscious about, because most of the time I'm dealing with early career researchers. I started as an early career researcher. TCC gave me professors to hold my hands. Now, if they were harsh on me, do you think I could have gotten the chance to be where I am today?
No,
I could
no,
not,
no, no.
because I could have said, this is a hard thing. These people are also being harsh on me. But they walked the journey with me. They held my hands, told me. In fact, they kept telling me, Nicholas, you know more than you are. There's just so much you know already. We are just helping you unlock it. So we just hold your hands and walk the journey with you. So I think when sometimes you mentor somebody and you make them feel stupid, then they, even if it is something they wanted to learn, they lose interest, because they say, ah, Nicholas sees me, even if they're going to give their point, be like, I'll give my point and I'll be insulted for giving that point. Then they don't feel, there's not that space is not there. But also, one thing I've done with the people I also mentor is I develop a very deep connection with them, because I think one thing that I've also learned from AIDA Africa, AIDA Africa and TCC, is that mentorship is not, it's not just about because when you are mentoring somebody, you are walking the journey with them. So it's not just about the superficial, like we meet every day and I talk to you about scientific writing. I ask you the point where your thesis is. I give you some tips here and there, and then it ends there. You know, once in a while, even if it's not a training session or a mentoring session, I would just, pick a call and say, hey, James, how are you? It's been a while. I hope you're okay. Then, it's just about. Then you start asking, hey, but then where's the thesis? I've been expecting you to send me at least some feedback on the thesis. So that personal connection is also one thing that has worked for me. And it's one thing, because at TCC, even if there is not a real engagement that has been going on, but then once in a while somebody drops a message on WhatsApp, somebody calls to say, hey, how are you? It's been a long time. I hope you are okay. I hope you are doing fine. I was just checking on you. Now, if you are doing that as a mentor, if you are doing that, your mentee now starts feeling like our relationship is beyond just the papers that we are writing. This person also cares about me as a human being. Yeah, because there's a lot surrounding this. So those are some of the things that have really helped me to be a better mentor for the people I deal with as a mentor. Yes.
Okay. That is quite interesting, because what you're really espousing is it's not only your passion for the activities that you're doing, especially when it comes to mentorship and also your research career, but it's also humanizing the process. When you humanize the process, it makes people at ease to work with you. And it means that you're also able to genuinely, the person, the recipient feels that he's genuinely being supported in achieving his goals, whether it means finishing his postgraduate degree or his publications. And this is And it can be, and I always say this, the postgraduate process can be very lonely, especially for early career researchers. It's very lonely, and if there is no support system, they quickly give up on the way. So yes, humanizing this process is extremely important. Now, I'm going to just digress a bit and ask, okay, so you have your academic background has influenced quite a number of activities that you've delved into, especially in entrepreneurial ventures. The first one you've talked about was Writing Hub Africa and how you're using that also as a support system to accommodate early career researchers, especially when it comes to scientific writing, to scientific writing. Now, you've also delved into other ventures, and one is this project called the Dala Integrated Aquaculture Hub, which is primarily based on your research focus, the focus of your research area. So the Dala Integrated Aquaculture Hub aims to empower women and youth in food production. So could you share more about the hub's mission, some of the positive outcomes it has had on your targeted communities?
Thank you so much. I think when you get people who encourage you to nurture and also encourage you to mentor others, then I think you subconsciously try to just hold people's hands moving forward, even beyond just academia. So what I realized, and when Dala Integrated Aquaculture Hub was an idea about, I've been working in part of so many projects, and one of them was the there's a project that ended that was talking about food security and food and nutrition security, and then I realized the outcomes of that research were published. We published very good papers, but then farmers did not read those papers, but if they did, a very small percentage did. So we developed very nice technologies like aquaponics, all these, bioflow systems that can help farmers enhance fish production in ponds, that can also reduce the amount of feed they are putting there. We developed very good technologies. But then I realized these things did not reach the farmers. Then I said, hey, why can I not form a small hub? It's still small right now, but the dream is big. Why can I form, can't I form a hub that just showcases the different simple technologies that can help rural communities, especially women and youth, enhance food production? So we are talking about food system, and I think the whole world is now talking about nutrition, food and nutrition insecurity. And the whole concept around Dala was to showcase, to make a hub where rural communities and peri-urban, because we are in a peri-urban setting, so rural and peri-urban communities, especially women and youth, can come and learn about different food production technologies and innovations. In fact, we call them TIMPs, technologies, innovations, and management practices that can enhance food production. So there we are showcasing things to do with different aquaculture technologies. We are doing different technologies in crop production, vegetables, fruits. We are also doing beehives. We have beehives there, and a few other technologies that we are showing. And I think the strength of that farm is where we are using trash to grow food. So one is we are using old tires, and we are making them into conical gardens or vertical gardens. Initially, conventionally, people use PVC papers to make those vertical gardens, but then we are using old tires to make the vertical garden. So we are talking about technologies that are friendly to the local community that they can afford cheaply and they can get. So far, because the hub is registered, and then under the hub there's a women group and a youth group, and then now there's a group of people with disability. So these groups are the ones that do the small different projects within the hub, but then the hub is now a uniting factor where anyone else can come and learn about this small technology. So far, so many women have now, and the youth have adopted some of these technologies at home, most of them, and I've always encouraged them, each person must have a conical garden at your backyard. You must have a small, even if it's just a raised pond, a small one that you can make out of offcuts, wood offcuts, and a pond liner, and you just make a small one that can give you 100 or 200 fish. So people are already adopting this, and we are also looking out for partners and sponsors and people who can support this. And the dream is that one time we can be able to a center that showcases these different technologies that are friendly to the local farmer that can also help them enhance food security. But the most important thing was to bridge the link between research and adoption. So adoption and upscaling of this research are research outputs, because we do good research, publish it on Nature or in Elsevier or somewhere, and it's kept there. Or we go and present this in conferences and seminars. And the farmer who is supposed to benefit from the output of this research does not benefit. So what we are doing, part of it is the citizen science part of this, because we are doing co-creation. Most of these technologies are being done by the youth and the women. And what I tell them is, once they create it, I look for some stance agronomy, for example, and I tell them, explain to these people why this one is producing more. Then you give the simplest science about it. You tell them, you know, if you put this, the way you've made it, it's going to produce more because of ABCD. So they feel like they are doing science, even if they don't understand the science behind it. So the co-creation is very important, because I think one thing that we do sometimes not in a very right way, the conventional way of doing research is we go to communities and tell them what to do. That is what some scientists are doing, and most scientists. I think we need to change the narrative, and that is part of what DALA Integrated Aquaculture Hub is going to do. Change the narrative, and we do what we call co-creation, and encourage this citizen science, involving them. When we started this thing, we said we want to form a youth group and a women group so that they understand this whole thing. I have a youth group, and if you meet people from this youth group, they will explain to you what we are doing there, why it is important for us to do it. They can explain to you why we are doing a polyculture of catfish and tilapia, and why we cannot grow Nile perch in fish ponds. They understand the simple things behind it. And that is, for me, is a very good thing, because now they understand why people do the things they do. There has always been a very disconnect between researchers and communities, because most communities do not understand what researchers do, and researchers don't understand what communities want and even what they do. So we come there and tell you, today we want to take blood samples. And we don't tell you where we are taking them. We don't even tell you what we are doing and why it is important for us to do those things and, you know, those things. So I said, this is a center, because we are already in talks with universities like Maseno, that they can always send students there to start doing experiments, and we can always partner in future when they are writing projects as part of community. We can always, so we are thinking of a center where we can now help bridge this. So whatever has been done in Maseno, for example, come to the hub. We will showcase the technology in a way that is downscaled, that a local farmer can take up and use. So that is part of the dream. And we are two of us. This idea came to me, I shared it with a lady, Julia, who is also now the co-founder at DALA. So we are two of us, but now, because we started this, we have a think tank behind it. So the think tank is a group of 15 people who are helping us now shape the
Amazing.
Idea, write proposals
Amazing.
And stuff.
Well done. Mm-hmm.
And I've always been, I think one of the things that Harrison has always told me, that you can have a very good idea, but then if you don't take care of it, the idea might end up growing too big and it overtakes you. So I'm already, because the idea is so big, so I don't want to stay with it alone. And then at one point you have so many people coming, and there's so much to handle, and no one will help you handle them, because you kept them away when you started the idea, because they don't understand. So they don't know what you're doing. They will tell you, Nicholas, die with your activities, because you did not want to involve us from the beginning. So I think that is one thing I was also picked, that if you have a brilliant idea, share it with like-minded people, and just start the dream with two or three people who have agreed to start the dream with you, and then they will see the potential, let them join. So right now, that is what we are doing at DALA Integrated Aquaculture Hub.
Amazing work. Amazing, amazing work that you're doing. And of course, I'm assuming you're also using your mentorship experience of working with different communities. You're working with, of course, with the academic community, but now you're using that experience as a mentor when working with the CBO community members at DALA International, Integrated Aquaculture Hub, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think there's part of this story that I will touch on a little bit. Part of most of the youth group that I'm working with, most of them are comprised of the people because before I started my journey with TCC, there was a problem, and then I became a boda-boda rider. So I used to ride motorcycles. I think people know what boda-boda is, these motorcycles that transport people at a fee. Yeah. So I used to be a boda-boda rider for close to 2 years. So most of the people that I'm working with are from our boda-boda base. So because I'm still the chairman there, they say they're not letting me go. They told me, Nicholas, even if you get a PhD, you will remain our chairman. So I am still the chairman. So when I started this, I said I wanted a youth group. They said, you are going to call other people, but then you have to reserve some spaces for our base because we've worked with you for a long time. They call me prof. So they're saying, prof, you are going with us. So part of what I'm doing is showing them that you can still do, most of them are still doing whatever, but of course my dream is if I can be able to, you know, help them in whichever way, but I'm mentoring them to be able to look for alternative livelihoods away from, because boda-boda at one point maybe might become unsustainable. But if I'm able to mentor them into embracing aquaculture or horticulture or agriculture as a cool business, then for me, I shall have done so much. So I think this is also a platform for me to mentor the youth and also the women, because what I'm doing is now for the women. There are people who are, you know, because the think tank is a group of people with different backgrounds. So there are people in rural development. There are people with the expertise in entrepreneurship. There are those who are expertise in nutrition, human nutrition and stuff. So when I want somebody to talk to the women about how to feed the young, the infants or all these things, I get these nutritionists to talk to them and mentor them and walk with them the journey. So I think it's just an extension of what I borrowed from academia, and now I'm now bringing it to the community, and it's working. And it's just my hope that because one thing with me is, as I said, I take my jobs, whatever I want to, because I don't know how to deal. It's a hard time. I'm struggling with that. When I start something and it fails, I always feel terrible. So I will never want to fail. And as I said also, I think one of the things that has also made me click very easily with the youth and the women group is I am a free soul. I like being easy. I really don't like, you know, people tiptoeing around me so much. And I also like keeping to the end of what I start. So if I tell you we are meeting at the farm tomorrow, and when we meet, we are going to do ABCD, I'll make sure I am there, and I'll make sure we do it as I promised. So then it so that people see the commitment. That is one thing that some of us working with communities has taught me, that if you tell them to come and then they don't see you, tomorrow you call them, they will not come because they will be like, that guy will not show up. So keep your end of the bargain and you will work well with these people.
So now, with all the developments that you've worked on in terms of mentorship within the scholarly communication ecosystem, and also within the project, the community-based project that you're working on, you have also diversified by mentoring on social media, and together with TCC and your organization, TCC Africa and your organization, Writing Hub Africa, we were able to launch the TikTok page, The Simple Academic, which is engaging early career researchers on this social media platform. So take us through how the scholarly community can utilize social media to increase their research visibility as well. And also how are you using this platform to effectively support and engage early career researchers? So how can you use the social media, how we are using the Simple Academic to engage and support researchers, but at the same time, how can also researchers take advantage of social media to increase their visibility?
Thank you so much. I think one of the things I had started talking about was the Simple Academic, which is a partnership between TCC Africa and Writing Hub Africa on TikTok to, you know, create scholarly different aspects of scholarly communication to also mentor these early career researchers beyond just the physical and the actual in-person trainings that we do. People use social media for different things, and you know, you cannot now ignore the power of social media. In fact, social media is becoming the mainstream media. So you can use it for several things. I want to give an example. I use social media for two things. One, if anybody sees what is there, is One is I use social media to demystify academia and demystify research and researchers. That's why once in a while I can throw a meme there. Once in a while I can, as long as it's not obscene, but once in a while I can throw a meme. Once in a while I can post a very nice story or a joke. One is to demystify research and demystify academia and researchers, like what we are doing on TikTok. Because what people go on TikTok maybe to just ease the pressure. Maybe they are from work or they are from school and they are saying, let me relax that I was as I watch a few videos on TikTok, maybe just make me laugh or just to entertain me. And then we say, as you entertain yourself, you can also find some few tips that can help you. And people have received it so well. And because we cross post it, so once we have it on TikTok, we can post it on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and all these other platforms. And people are really, you know, people are really interested in this, and they are saying, I've seen several people commenting and saying, this is why I am here. I've found what I was looking for. So it means that we are using now social media, especially TikTok, Facebook, and LinkedIn, through the short videos that we create to reach beyond just the people whom we cannot reach physically or those who cannot fit into our conventional trends that we do at TCC Africa or at Writing Hub Africa. Now, researchers can use social media to showcase what they do. People are doing so many good things, and there's a lot of noise on social media. You have to be part of that noise. Otherwise, your voice will be drowned completely. Nobody will hear you, what you are doing. So you're doing a very good job, but you keep it under wraps and nobody knows what you are doing. So not everyone is a social media person, but then once you publish a paper, let's say you are working on a project, once in a while you can be posting, not into too much detail of the data that is there, because then you see what to share on social media, but then just share enough, just some general information about the project so that people get to know, okay, so currently this is what these people are doing, this is the objectives of the project, maybe this is how it is going to impact the community. When you publish a paper, write just a general synopsis of the paper, then put the link to that paper. What will this do? People will click on this paper. Some of them will download and even cite your paper. Some of them will just download and read, but then you shall have expanded your reach. Because there are people who could not have seen this paper on the website of the journal where it was published, but then you brought it closer to them on social media. I want to give an example. There's a time I have been posting a lot of things on aquaculture and some project we were doing on LinkedIn, and somebody reached out to me. So they reached out to me from Asia, and they wanted me to do some job for them just based on what I post on social media, because they saw I post a lot about aquaculture, about this project on food security. And just like that, I got a job and I got a consultancy, and you know, we got some money out of it. So that is how powerful social media has been. I think one of the other things that you also asked was about how I've answered how people can use social media to enhance visibility, research visibility. So I think it's just about stepping out of your comfort zone. I know so many people are saying, I'm not a social media person, and people also think that social media is for jokers. Of course, let's say there are 70,000 jokers, but then there's also 200 people who are serious, who could be intrigued by what you are posting on Twitter, on LinkedIn, or on Facebook. Because I have seen people reaching out to me from as far as London to ask me, hey, I want to come and do some research about Nile Perch in Lake Victoria. I see you post a lot about Nile Perch, about Lake Victoria, about fisheries. Is it possible you can partner? Just because they saw this on LinkedIn, they saw this on Facebook, they saw this on social media. So social media is a powerful, powerful platform that researchers can use to enhance their visibility.
Okay, so now, which leads to my final question. What are your parting shots to early career researchers? Any researcher wants to get into mentorship, what would you advise them to do?
What I would advise is, one, there's no shortcut to some of these things. You put a lot of work into this. And one thing that I have learned over the years, and this is one what I tell early career researchers, is what it starts out and you are told, people, there are people on the side, there are several voices that will be telling you that your mentor is using you. That is one thing that you need to get out of your way. So and so is using you to make money. Evaluate your relationship with this guy. Is he really holding your hands? Is he pointing you to directions of opportunities? Because there's a time to learn and a time to earn. That is one thing that early career researchers must know. This learning phase sometimes is very uncomfortable. you work with a professor who gives you a lot of work, and then you keep saying, ah, this guy keeps sending me things to do for him and he's doing nothing. Because when you send these things to him, you get feedback. That is how you learn. Because you will start writing proposals for funding so that you become a professor like him. How will you learn these things if you don't get, if this professor does not give you work? So be patient enough to learn so that at one point you will start earning. So there's a time to learn and there's a time to earn. That is one. Secondly, give your, you know, be able to be teachable. You know, be just somebody who is teachable. If you are given a platform, this is what I tell early career researchers, if you have a platform, don't play around with that platform. And I will give an idea around here. I got a platform through TCC Africa. Now it is through this platform that I'm today a moderator at Africa Archive. I am a mentor at TCC and also at Aid Africa. I am an editor right now at Plus One. I'm also doing, there's some work we are doing with TCC for Kabi. We are working with so many organizations. And you know what that means? Apart from just building my profile, I'm also getting money. I think this is one thing we also need to talk about. I'm also making money in the process. So I'm telling you that when you get a platform as an early career researcher, try as much as you can to use it. There are so many organizations that will only give you the platform. How you use that platform is up to you. So if you get a good platform, make good use of that platform. But then you also have to love doing what you are doing. And the bottom line is, don't try to block yourself from what you are doing. This, I don't know how to put, but what I'm saying, always bring a piece of you into what you do. If you are mentoring people and you are a person who is funny, you like using humor, for example, and you know I'm a funny guy. Like I know, you know, once in a while I could throw in jokes here and there. Don't try to say that when I'm now mentoring people, I have to be very serious. Otherwise, they will not take me seriously. They will always take you seriously if they know the content is legit. So this is what you do. You can use humor if you're somebody who likes humor. Don't try to say that I'm not going to use humor here because this person will not know. Bring a part of you, because when you bring a part of you into your mentorship, or you bring a part of you into your research, you bring a part of you into the team you are working with right now, you bring a part of you into what you are doing, what happens is people will connect with you. That authenticity makes people connect with you more freely, and then the connection becomes deeper, and then you now find the work is flawless, because that is what I've also seen. One of my immediate mentors is Dr. Gelo, and one of the things is we are very free with him. If you see, sometimes I post things on social media and I just tag him, and you see we just joke with him. So when he calls me to his office and says, Nicholas, I want us to discuss this chapter of your thesis, I don't go there tensed. There's no tension, because I'm going to meet my friend. So because I'm authentic and it's authentic with me. So these are some of the things. Don't try, bring a piece of you if you want to bring it, but just try to moderate the piece of you that you bring, but don't block it completely. So that is the parting shot. And I hope whoever will listen to this, because I know it's going to reach so many people, they will be able to understand that it's a journey. People don't wake up one day, because sometimes when we mentor people, they, Nicholas, how did you come to know this? How did you know about all these tools? How did you know how to do this? No, it's a journey, and it takes a lot of dedication. There's a time to learn and there's a time to earn.
That is a nice way to end. Indeed, there's a time to learn and there's a time to earn. Thank you so much for sharing with us your journey. We are so proud of your achievements, and I truly hope that you will continue supporting early career researchers and mentoring them in this process, and also making them understand it's a process. It's a journey. It's not a quick fix. There's no quick fix to this process, and it's something that we should inculcate as our everyday in our everyday activities, so that we are able to support those who are in need, and also be ready to be supported, because that is the only way we're able to work in this entire research life cycle, and also appreciate the power of mentorship. So thank you so much, Nicholas, and do have a lovely day. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of Mazum Gumzo Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on all our channels for more updates and for candid stories by researchers, policymakers, higher education leaders, and innovators on their journeys. See you in our next episode.